So hello everyone and welcome to today's podcast. I'm Christian Tarakovsky, your host, and I'm thrilled to introduce our guest for today, Mr. Steven Ezel, a renowned expert in technology policy and competitiveness, AI Industry 4.0 and future of work. He is part of the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation, and I'm really glad that he is here to discuss some important issues with us today. This podcast is part of the 20th anniversary conference that we're organizing in Skopje with the CRPM. And I would like to give a brief introduction before asking Steven some interesting questions for today. So with his extensive background in this area, Steven is perfect guest to help us to navigate these complex and exciting topics. As I already said, Industry 4.0, he is one of the topics that you're interested in, and you're an expert in that field, in technology advancement, etc. So Industry 4.0 has the potential to transform the global landscape of production, and together with AI to change the way we do our work, and we'll find out whether it is going to be for good or for bad. It is up to us to see how we'll use those tools that are available today. So development of AI is seen as fundamental, as so far it is the creation of microchips and computer and the internet and the mobile phone that change everything around us. So it will change the way people work, it will change how people learn, travel, get healthcare, and communicate with each other. So probably it will change everything. It started so far with broader use of chatbots or copilots that were introduced, such as Copilot of Microsoft, that is part of our browsers or our smartphones, that is recently introduced in our cell phones that we're using every day. So entire industries and entire lives of ourselves will change, and everything will be reoriented around AI. So business will distinguish themselves by how well they use it. So Mr. Ezel, welcome to the podcast. If you have something to add or introduce yourself, please, on this topic, and I will give my first question later.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Christian. I look forward to the conversation. You're absolutely right that Industry 4.0, the application of a broad swath of modern digital tools, everything from artificial intelligence to cloud computing to big data to sensors, robotics, computer-aided design software, is going to transform virtually every industry and virtually every job within industries.
Yes, so let's dive right in. So the future of AI and the Industry 4.1 is a fascinating topic for every one of us. So Steven, what are the most significant technological advancements that we can expect in the near future within the Industry 4.0? How do you envision AI evolving over the, let's say, 10 years from now?
Well, I think the first point is that the impact of these technologies upon societies and economies are going to be profound. A recent study from Deloitte found that the application of AI should contribute $15.7 trillion to the global economy by the year 2030, $6.6 trillion in increased productivity gains and $9.1 trillion in increased economic consumption. When we look at the impacts on Europe, Deloitte finds that AI will add $2.5 trillion to Europe's economy by 2030, including $700 billion for southern European economies, which they estimate means that by 2030, AI will account for 11.5% of the economy of southern Europe. Truly profound. A recent study found that fully one-third of European firms are already using AI in their businesses. And when we look across sectors, I have a few examples to share because I think some of the applications are going to be wildly profound. Maybe to look at healthcare first.
Okay.
A recent study in Nature found that AI systems using sophisticated image recognition technologies detected 20% more breast cancer in mammograms than radiologists alone were detecting. 20% of the cancers, 20% of breast cancers go undetected currently, and 83% of those are invasive. So the application of AI tools will have an enormous effect on cancer screening and broader healthcare detection. Another really incredible example from the healthcare sector comes from this company called Grail in California. What they have the ability to do using AI in combination with organic chemistry is that from a single blood draw using liquid biopsy, they can detect over 50 different types of cancer with a 99% degree of specificity of accurate detection, so very low false positives. And they have the ability to trace that cancer signal to the tissue of origin with 88% accuracy. Could have a profound impact on cancer, especially considering that globally, 1 in 3 women and 1 in 2 men are expected to receive a cancer diagnosis at some point in their lifetimes. Looking at manufacturing, AI is going to transform everything from how products are designed to how they are fabricated with tools like 3D printing, to how factories operate and supply chains interconnect. Maybe just one example, using what's called generative design software. This gives product designers the ability to go into the software and specify the types of attributes that they would like a product to have. So the software goes in and spits out optimal designs. So Airbus, using this technology to design their new A320 aircraft, just the bulwark partition in that aircraft, they were able to design one that was 40% lighter but 50% stronger, all just using generative design software. Another interesting example from manufacturing. If you know the firm Fanuc, this is the company that makes industrial robots like in auto manufacturing. So they have this new factory in Japan. It's a 24/7 lights out factory where essentially Fanuc's robots actually build their offspring. So the robots themselves manufacture the robot and so the robots
they are producing themselves.
So the robots are constantly teaching themselves to perform tasks faster and more efficiently. They found that today, what used to take one robot 8 hours to accomplish can now be performed in 1 hour by 8 robots learning and working together. So just incredible applications in manufacturing. We can talk more about that. Go ahead.
Yes. But you said that the technology is developing in real intelligence. They can build themselves, okay? They can be included in healthcare, in providing medical services, for example, using applications, softwares, etc. So you mentioned also that the technology-driven applications and technology-driven investments will provide also long-term economic growth for all of the countries throughout the globe who will applicate this. Technological innovations. But what about the real people? What about those who are actually affected by possible destruction of their jobs with AI? Can they be easily replaced with a robot, or are they able to adapt and to the new circumstances, to a new world in which they can be competitive on the labor market, or they can be, you know, like that easily shift with something that is faster and maybe cheaper?
There was a great quote the other day which said, you're probably not going to be replaced by a robot, but you may be replaced by someone who knows AI and who knows how to do your job. Mm-hmm. So broadly, I think the advent of AI opens up incredible opportunities in the workplace, but it's going to require companies and societies to train individuals to use these tool sets to keep them competitive and productive in the economy. A couple of examples. There was a recent study done by the U.S. consulting firm Accenture. They surveyed 1,200 CEOs across about 300 global companies, multinational corporations. It was very interesting. What they found was that only 1/4 of executives, quote, believed that our workforce is ready for AI adoption. However, when they surveyed the workers at those firms, 68% of highly skilled workers and nearly half of the lower skilled workers were, quote, enthusiastic about AI's potential impact on their work, while 67% of workers considered it important to develop their own skills to work with intelligent machines. In Europe specifically, a recent study by AWS looked at 14,000 businesses and 16,000 citizens across the European Union. What they found was that over half of citizens think that AI will positively impact their day-to-day life within the next 3 years. 61% of European citizens were enthusiastic about embracing new digital technologies. Only 18% were unenthusiastic. 55% of Europeans said they were excited to learn new digital skills and were actively seeking online mechanisms to do so. Really interesting. More practically, another recent study from the OECD of 5,300 workers across the OECD, looking at workers in manufacturing and finance sectors specifically, found that 80% of AI users found that AI had improved their performance at work. Only 8% said they had worsened it. And most recently, I think, from that OECD study, what they're finding is AI is not replacing jobs, but it's changing tasks. That survey across the OECD found 66% of employers in finance and 72% in manufacturing reported that AI had automated tasks that the workers used to do. But they said that for the most part, AI was twice as likely to automate either repetitive or dangerous tasks, freeing them up to kind of add more value in the organization. So, you know, I think there's evidence out there that broadly, while people are curious of AI,
yes,
they're not necessarily skeptical.
They're curious. They're maybe not skeptical. But as you already said at the beginning of answering this question, you mentioned that those who are well prepared, those who are highly educated and have the skills, can adapt easily. So we have to probably take care for those who are at higher risk and who have a lower education or who actually do some jobs that can be easily it can be easily replaced with technology. So that's something probably we should consider how to protect those workers, because there is possibility that maybe for, let's say, 10 or 20 years from now, those who are with lower skills will probably be jobless, or we'll find it harder to adapt to the new circumstances. Although, as you already mentioned, there is willingness among the citizens to use this. I mean, we see in everyday life that everyone is actually interested how the chatbot works. They find out something new. Actually, they are somehow replacing even the internet browsers. So if you want something new to learn, you ask the chatbot. You are not searching anymore on Google. So as you already said, it has the potential to increase not only competitiveness, but also to increase our capacities, our skills, and new learned skills maybe more easily than that was 10 or 20 years ago. I think personally, for example, for me, it can have great impact on my job, for example, using as a co-pilot softwares that can actually save some time, for example, in peer reviewing a document, and I can be more productive for doing new things. It is great. It is increasing my productivity. It saves time, etc. But the other side of the story, as already mentioned, is what we do with those with low skills that do not have the competencies to adapt to the new circumstances. Are they at high risk at the moment to be jobless and to not be adapted in those new labor market requirements?
I think there's certainly a risk for lower skilled in society. And that's why it's absolutely imperative, first, that educational systems are providing, mm-hmm, you know, rigorous training in application of digital skills. You don't necessarily have to know how to code AI, but you know how to use the product of AI systems. That should be taught in, mm-hmm, all schools at the K-12 level. At a society level, you know, when you think about a nation's workforce, there are really two components of it. There's the people entering the workforce, workforce coming up through the educational system. Yes. And there's the people in the workforce already. And that's where nations need to have really strong workforce retraining or workforce reskilling programs. So
education is key probably to...
Yeah. This is a problem in the United States. The U.S. actually invests only 1/6 the OECD average in government funding of workforce retraining and reskilling. So it's a challenge for us. More Europe does better. In Finland, they have this framing of it that when you graduate from high school, you're not going to be job secure, but you're going to be skill secure. That our nation is committed to equipping you with the skills that you will be employable in the modern global economy, if not at one job, then at another. But by the way, there's this really fascinating book I'd commend to your listeners. It's by Paul Daugherty and James Wilson. It's called Human and Machine, Reimagining Work in the Age of AI. And they go through sector by sector, from finance to tourism to government services, healthcare, etc. But they make the point that the future is going to belong to the individuals and companies who figure out the optimal ways of getting humans and machines to work most productively together. And what they say is look, there's going to be a set of skills where humans are always better. Things like leading, empathizing, creating, judging. Separately, there's going to be a domain of skills where the machines are always going to be better. Transacting, iterating, predicting, adapting. But they say kind of in the middle, we have this hybrid and machine-human activity. And we can imagine a set of roles or tasks where humans are going to complement machines, and conversely, AI is going to give humans superpower. So for instance, roles or jobs that touch on embodying, interacting, or amplifying, for example. If you think about like the cobot, this makes kind of the robot the extension of the human hand on the factory floor. And there was a really great quote from Marcus Schaefer, who runs production planning for BMW. And what he said was, we're moving away from trying to maximize automation with people taking a bigger part in industrial processes again. When we have people and machines cooperating, such as a person guiding a part automatic robot, we're much more flexible and can produce many more products on the production line. The variety is too much for the machines to take on. We find that when humans and machines work together, people working in our factories are 85% more productive than they were before. So that's a good example of how machines will give humans superpowers. And these are the types of kind of hybrid machine tasks that we should focus on for the future.
Yes, Steven, you're right. Probably it will be up to us how we use the technology. It's definitely, it has great potential, as you already mentioned, great potential for increasing productivity and using it for good, for adapting workers, not just distracting jobs, destruction of jobs, etc. So that is very, very interesting insights that that you mentioned, interesting numbers. So finally, I will focus the discussion on the regulations. Do we need regulations on these issues? So far, do the countries already implemented some regulations governing the use and application of AI in the workplace, governing and use of new technological advancements, new methods of working? Do we need this, and what specific steps should governments undertake to ensure ethical and responsible use of AI?
Well, a couple points here. I think first, for policymakers, it is a key point that broadly at the economy level, policymakers should not fear job loss from AI. Now, that's much in the news today. A guy named Martin Ford wrote this book called The Rise of the Robots, a New York Times bestseller, in which he counseled policymakers to expect 75% unemployment in Western societies by the year 2100.
The black scenarios.
Right. The reason this is not the case is because analyses like that fall prey to what economists call the lump of labor fallacy. This is the notion that there is only a fixed number of jobs in an economy. And if a machine replaces a person, then that job is irrevocably gone. But those types of analysis tend to miss the second order effects from economic growth, right? So if we can produce a car, twice as productively as we did before, for instance, then those savings kind of flow through to the rest of the economy, either by letting us sell that car at half the price, in which case you can go out and buy a second car or take your wife out on more dates, or, you know, to higher wages for remaining workers. And the reality is that human needs and wants are remain unsatisfied and are limitless. So as long as we have well-functioning economies, productivity-driven growth will actually bolster employment, not decrease it.
Mm-hmm. Great.
You know, more broadly with regard to AI regulation, you know, our view is that policymakers need to take a cautious approach, not overreact to nascent fears when formulating policy to avoid kind of unduly harming generative AI with misguided laws and regulations. If you look, for instance, at Italy, they mm-hmm. went and instantaneously banned the use of ChatGPT. That's just not productive. Our view is that while some forms of AI will need appropriate regulations, policymakers need to be regulating on actual harms and not potential or possible ills of these technologies. We did an analysis of what we felt would be the economic impact of the EU's AI Act on the European economy. And we found that it's going to cost Europe $36 billion over a five-year period because, in our view, it categorizes too many AI applications in a high-risk versus a low-risk category. So we certainly agree that if we're using AI to fly your plane, that requires the highest level of AI risk assessment. But the EU's AI Act would make a higher risk application be something like using AI in credit scoring. It would put any use of ChatGPT in the high risk category. So in our view, that's kind of over-regulation that is going to have more of a limiting impact on the technologies. We actually found that if you are a small European business, you can expect total compliance cost of up to 400,000 euros for one high-risk AI product requiring a quality management system. This means that the Act would cause a 40% reduction in profit for a European business with less than $10 million in turnover wanting to deploy a high-risk AI system. So in general, our view is that as the first order, policymakers should look to see if they can work with industry to define self-regulation or codes of practice that may prove equally or more effective than top-down regulation. These types of soft law approaches are often superior to hard law because the private sector is more nimble, can move faster to address some of these technologies. We do certainly agree that we have to bring ethical considerations into the use of AI, but it's important here to remember that if, like, you're a business, you in the US and Europe are responsible for not discriminating, mm-hmm. not using biased practice, biases in your hiring practices. So those types of regulations already exist. We don't need AI to be separately regulated to manage those particular instances. So we should really focus on AI regulation only with regard to very specific technical applications in very specific sectors. Regulating AI broadly is not a good idea.
Yeah, in everyday use, we don't need it, actually. If it's assisting citizens, for example, why Jim in Tennessee is going to be regulated how he'll use a chatbot if he's only searching or something like that. But as you already mentioned, we need regulation, especially on the ethical aspects and especially about security issues. And you mentioned all those sectors and applications such as co-pilot, driving a plane, without input by a human, autonomously driving or making decisions based on some calculations when we need a human to rethink and bring some empathy in some decision making process. So you already mentioned that there are aspects for these issues that we need regulation and need to be regulated It should be a top priority for the policymakers. But on the other side, we have something that we need to put it free to be developed and used for citizens, and something that do not make any harm, but as you already said, it's for the better, it's for providing more information, acquiring new skills, increasing productivity, increasing competitiveness of each citizen, and using the AI and using the softwares for good. So thank you very much, Steve, and I would kindly ask you if you have something to add that you want to point out, something that I missed to ask you, or you have something to add in this end. So please.
No, I would just add that I hope European policymakers, when they look at AI, come at it more from what we call the innovation principle versus the precautionary principle, right? The innovation principle is that kind of it's that the burden is on the regulator to prove that a particular technology or business model might cause ill or harm to society. Whereas kind of the innovation principle, you know, holds that the overwhelming majority of technological innovations benefit society and pose modest and kind of not irreversible risk. So the government's role should really be to pave the way for widespread innovation while building guardrails where appropriate to limit harm. But that the bias is on the regulator to show that a particular technology causes real harms that need to be addressed, not the innovator. Thank you so much for the invitation to join you today. I very much enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you. Thank you once again, Steven. This has been a fascinating discussion about the future of AI, future of work, Industry 4.1, and what we can expect in the next decade. So it is interesting, and it is interesting even for our listeners and those especially who are policymakers to have in mind the positive aspects of technology development and how we can use it to increase economic growth and use it for good. So we appreciate your taking the time to join us today, and hopefully we'll meet again and do another discussion in the near future. Thank you, Steven.
My pleasure. Thank you.